From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Monday, December 15th. I'm Abby Larico. With delays and cancellations, overbookings, and stressed out fellow passengers, sometimes navigating the skies can be an act of faith. For the past 40 years, a group of chaplains at St. Louis Lambert International Airport has been helping travelers find calm in the chaos. But they say they need community support to keep that mission going.
Atlanta, they usually have a budget of about $54,000. We're around a tenth of that, and sometimes even less. A lot of us just come out of our pocket.
STLPR's Andrea Henderson connected with members of the St. Louis Lambert Airport Interfaith Chaplaincy about their services. That story's coming up after this news on The Gateway. A new watchdog report finds the St. Louis Public Schools loses thousands of dollars per student every year to tax incentives for development projects in the city. This, while development officials say the deals are necessary to reverse population trends. St. Louis Public Radio's Kayvon Mansouri has details on the findings.
Good Jobs First annual analysis of tax incentives in St. Louis found that over the past 8 years, abatements have cost SLPS roughly $2,300 per student every year. The study found tax increment financing districts, or TIFs, cost school districts the most. TIFs capture tax revenue that would typically go towards public services like school districts and instead subsidize development. Greg Leroy is executive director of Good Jobs First.
Think about how much enhancement you could do with more teacher aides, more extracurricular activities, more enhancements in terms of classroom technology and staffing levels.
St. Louis Development Corporation head Otis Williams pushed back on the report, calling it an unfair analysis. He says without tax incentives, developers will not come to the city. I'm Kayvon Mansouri, St. Louis Public Radio.
You can read more of that reporting at stlpr.org. St. Louis residents will vote in April whether to retain the city's earnings tax. Mayor Kara Spencer signed legislation Friday putting the tax on the ballot as required by a 2010 referendum. The 1% tax on the salaries of people who live or work in the city makes up one-third of its general revenue fund. In a recent Politically Speaking appearance, 8th Ward Alderwoman Jamie Cox Entwee, who sponsored the legislation, says she knows the vote is just about preserving the money the city already receives.
We need to be able to ultimately grow it from there, and that's bringing jobs back to the city, investing in small businesses so that small businesses are able to exist here and pay into those sales taxes that also help fund our city.
Cox Entwee says attracting people to the city and keeping them there will also require better housing and a focus on pedestrian safety. If voters do not retain the tax, it would phase out over 10 years. The St. Louis Board of Aldermen is making it cheaper to run for office in the city. Legislation sent to Mayor Spencer Friday reduces the filing fee for alderperson from more than $700 to $100. Candidates for citywide offices, like mayor, will pay $250. The bill also requires an election even if there are two or fewer people running for a seat and sets out what happens if there's a tie. Supporters of the changes say they fixed some problems that arose when the city adopted approval voting. Opponents disagree, though, and say it creates more confusion. Missouri policymakers expect fallout in a St. Louis-based congressional district if the U.S. Supreme Court strikes down part of the Voting Rights Act. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum explains.
The U.S. Supreme Court appears likely to strike down a portion of the Voting Rights Act, protecting congressional seats like Missouri's 1st District, which has a plurality African-American population. Democratic State Representative Lakeisha Bosley says the 1st District has been critical for expanding black political power in St. Louis.
The legislature is playing with people's lives, quite literally, and that means that they're playing with their access to their legislature and to their representatives.
Republicans have traditionally supported a majority black 1st District since it makes surrounding districts more GOP-leaning. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
A legal case over whether Missouri Secretary of State Denny Hoskins can throw out thousands of signatures for a redistricting referendum is effectively on hold. The group People Not Politicians sued Hoskins after he said he would not count signatures supporting a referendum collected before the middle of October. That group then turned in more than 300,000 signatures, likely more than enough to make the ballot even without the ones gathered before mid-October. Cole County Judge Christopher Limbaugh ruled Friday that he is pausing the case, pointing out that it may be moot if the referendum qualifies for the November 2026 ballot anyway. He also ordered Hoskins to retain all the signatures, regardless of whether they're accepted or rejected. Hoskins told St. Louis Public Radio that he is not disposing of the pre-October 14th signatures in case a court orders him to count them. Democratic U.S. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois says Indiana's decision not to redistrict mid-decade is a pleasant surprise. The Indiana State Senate voted 31-19 last week to not redraw their state's congressional maps. That's despite a call from the president to do so that has been answered by other states, including Missouri. Durbin made his comments in Cahokia Heights Friday.
When Donald Trump calls on these states to redraw their congressional maps, he is conceding the obvious. He doesn't believe his candidates or his issues are going to win that primary election. So he's got to rig the election by changing the boundaries of the districts. I'm glad that Indiana saw through it.
The Indiana Senate's vote means Illinois lawmakers will keep their maps for the 2026 elections. That's because Governor J.B. Pritzker had said he would only ask the Illinois General Assembly to redistrict if Indiana did. Some St. Louis immigrant service providers are warning asylum seekers, refugees, and people with pending immigration applications to keep their documents safe and organized. This comes after the Department of Homeland Security issued a memo this month indefinitely pausing all asylum applications. It also halted immigration applications for people coming from 19 countries that it deems high risk, including Venezuela, Yemen, and Sudan. Paul Costigan is the state's refugee coordinator.
We're recommending that people keep copies of their documents with them, but not the originals, and to not have the documents on a cell phone.
Costigan also recommends if people get immigration notices to bring them to an immigration service provider to review. A St. Louis County-based nonprofit is creating a safe space for kids to process trauma and grief. Children Overcoming Painful Experiences with Support, or COPES, is the brainchild of Cal Brown, the co-founder and executive director of the Michael Brown Sr. Chosen for Change organization. The free program will work with St. Louis County residents ages 5 to 17. Each cohort of 25 kids will participate in peer-led group discussions, as well as have access to a behavioral therapist and grief coach. Brown says this program is an opportunity to heal and change the narrative on generational trauma.
If we don't heal this generation, they'll birth the children who will either walk you across the street or kill you. So we have to do our due diligence to assure that our children are put in safe spaces and given the ability and the tools to heal from whatever it is.
Registration for St. Louis County residents at chosenforchange.org/COPES ends today. COPES starts in early January. Over the past 40 years, the St. Louis Lambert International Airport chaplaincy has prayed with military families, has helped stranded travelers with hotels, and supported numerous unhoused people with social services, all through in-kind donations. But as St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson reports, chaplains say their finances are slowly drying up.
Travelers are speed walking through Terminal 1's baggage claim at St. Louis Lambert International Airport. While most were checking their phones and greeting their loved ones, everyone passed right by the airport's hidden in plain sight chapel. Airport chaplains say this is common, but their ministry isn't only inside the chapel. It's also being a presence outside of it.
You're looking sharp today. You know that? You're looking good.
That's Deacon Maurice Milne. But everyone who knows Lambert's deputy chaplain calls him Mo.
You doing good today? No problems? Okay, well, good. I'm ready. You got a problem, I'm ready. Call me.
As an airport chaplain, Mo walks through both terminals chatting with travelers and employees about their day. He says most people don't even know there are two staffed interfaith chapels in St. Louis's airport open 24/7.
We're there to be present in our ministry and also to be present for the 7,000 employees that work here and to be here for their ups and downs.
Letitia Mack is an operations manager at Lambert. She's grateful to have chaplains readily available.
With the day-to-day process of how everything goes on, you just never know what someone is going through, but just to know and have the idea that someone is there if you need to talk, if you do need prayer, if you just need somebody to say hi.
According to research, most of the country's largest airports have chapels. Smaller airports have meditation or prayer rooms. Most of the chapels are either Christian or Catholic, and others are interfaith, like Lambert's. St. Louis's airport chaplaincy consists of 12 volunteer clergy. They don't prophesy, but offer worship services, prayer, and support to anyone in need. In the 80s, a number of St. Louis area clergy advocated for an airport chapel. The interfaith chaplaincy was commissioned in 1985. Lambert chaplains are worried that the little-known service may not survive in the coming years due to a lack of funding.
Atlanta, they usually have a budget of about $54,000. We're around a tenth of that, and sometimes even less, a lot of us just come out of our pocket.
That's Reverend Roderick Burton. Lambert's lead chaplain says they have to rely on community partners and in-kind donations to get them through each year. Last year, Lambert served about 16 million passengers. Burton says the number of people they encounter who need help financially, emotionally, or spiritually is innumerable. But they do what they can with the funding they have.
One time we had a woman who was dumped here, no ID. Eventually, we got her to an agency that helped her, but we had to just let her stay in the chapel for a few days, provide food, and make sure the police were looking out for her.
Chaplains have purchased hotel rooms and bus tickets for stranded travelers. They've provided social services for the unhoused and helped immigrants in various ways.
Since the current administration has come in, we had to deal with a young man who showed up here who wanted to self-deport. And so the poor guy was just kind of bounced around. We put him up, and eventually the city was able to help him.
Burton says another financial burden is raising $400,000 over the next few years to outfit their chapel inside Lambert's upcoming new terminal.
People just think about, you know, the product of is flying a person from here to there, but what's missed is it's human beings. Human beings have various crises. The gate agent is not the person to go to when you're having trouble.
Chaplains say losing the service would be detrimental to travelers and the region. They hope more community partners will step in to help, but until then, they say it's an opportunity to let the Holy Spirit lead. I'm Andrea Henderson, St. Louis Public Radio.
Our Brian Moline edited that piece. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway.